Ooh.
Oh.
I sound really loud.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
I can.
Hello?
And welcome to We the People Radio. We're in the new studio with the colored microphones, and it's a huge room and a big table. We can have like a party in here, actually.
Yeah, you can.
We have room for like hors d'oeuvres, all sorts of good stuff.
I thought there was going to be a buffet going on in here, but I don't see any food.
It does have buffet written all over it, doesn't it? So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere and Kubota tractor dealer. And right now, if you want to get some service done, they're going to start their new their annual winter service special. Yeah, well, this is a little bit premature on this because it doesn't start till January. But I think I can say
that's
it now.
What, tomorrow?
Yeah, it's 2 days from now. So, but yeah, they're going to run their service special. So if you want to get some service work done out in the shop, get your machine tuned up or whatever, go in there and see them, and you get a big discount. And they're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, or you can get them online at ReddingTractors.com, and their phone number is 226-9226. I think I'm popping on this mic. I'm not sure.
It's you.
Is it me?
Yeah, it's you doing it.
Okay. Yeah, I flinch. I'm popping my ears. Sure, Ashley can take care of that.
Well, the good news is we have full supervision today.
Yeah, we do.
Full supervision because we have Sheriff Tom Pasenko here in the studio, so yeah, we literally do have full supervision.
Yeah, we won't get out of hand. We
won't go that far, but okay.
Hey, what's up with that? Your shirt matches your microphone.
Hey, I'm a blue collar type of guy.
We look like schlubs.
Yeah, I know.
What's going on over
totally
here?
Totally not coordinated. I feel out of place.
Spastic.
Yeah.
So let's see. I was looking at your bio because I don't read it that often. I see you all the time. I know where you are sometimes because we run into you always in Costco. Very odd. You've been in law enforcement for over 30 years?
Be 40 this coming March.
I better change that.
Yeah.
No kidding?
Yep. I started in 1979 as a deputy sheriff right here in Shasta County and worked my way up through the ranks, and here I am today as sheriff of Shasta County.
Did you want to... Were you like the little kid who ran around with the gun belt and the little...
Kind of. I enjoyed, as a kid, I enjoyed the shows Adam 12 and Dragnet and
Didn't
Chips
we all?
And all that, and was looking for a law enforcement career even when I was in high school.
No kidding. And you've, how long have you been the sheriff?
12 years now, and just got reelected to my fourth term, starting here in about a week.
Nice.
Wow.
Well, obviously, we've
And for the folks that live out of state and are listening, California has 4-year terms for a sheriff, elected position. And
is that pretty standard?
It is pretty standard. We run on the other 58 county sheriffs, we run on the gubernatorial cycle, which just ended, and then some other states run on the presidential cycle.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah. How big a turnover was it? Was this one of those years when you had a lot of retirement and
we
all that
have
stuff?
A lot of retirements, and then there was a few of the sheriffs that were not reelected, and I think we had about 19 to 21. Sometimes we have as high as about 26 within the state, but we had a few retirements that were midterm, and then we had the elections, and then, like I said, a few sheriffs were not reelected.
Hmm.
And so we have a new group of sheriffs coming in. Like, we have a new sheriff in Trinity County, which is our neighboring county there. And then some of the other ones, Sierra County has a new sheriff. Los Angeles County has a new sheriff. Ventura has a new sheriff. Stanislaus County has a new sheriff. The sheriff there, Adam Christensen, will be retiring here in a couple of weeks.
Hmm. Well, just out of curiosity, I would think that you would be like a deputy sheriff and then you run for sheriff, but that's not really how
it works. In California, all the time, huh? There is a constitutional requirement that you have to be a peace officer or a retired peace officer with post certification. And post is the Commission on California Peace Officer Standards and Training. So you have to have a basic academy, certain amount of experience to be able to run for sheriff. In some other states, you could be a John Q. Citizen, Joe the Grocer, have no law enforcement background, and run and be elected for sheriff.
Really?
Wow. So yeah. You can have...
Seems kind of sketchy.
You can be a peace officer and not have post-training?
Yes. There's some classifications of people that have peace officer powers, but they're not a post-certified.
And that's good enough to be sheriff if they were to be elected? Or could
not
they,
in California. Not, you have to have a post-certification.
Okay.
And a certain amount of
on the
training
job.
Or on the job working and or a combination of that and education.
So in all the counties in the country, are they all in charge of the jail? Is that a pretty standard thing?
Can't speak for the other states. Generally, sheriffs are in charge of the jail, and there's a couple here in
the
California. Here in California, that have a Department of Corrections that's not under the charge of sheriff. I think those are some charter counties, but it's also a constitutional requirement within California that the sheriff run and operate a jail. I think there's one county that does not have a jail, but they contract with two neighboring counties and have to travel there depending on the weather conditions. It's a small county, so they travel to the north if the south is blocked and vice versa.
Wow. So you couldn't just roll in and, I mean, how many people are in, you know, I mean, when you go to work, you're in charge of how many people?
Roughly about 200. We have 200 civilian personnel, and then we have the sworn personnel that basically works the streets and our detectives. And then our people that work in the jail are correctional deputies, but they are not post-certified deputies. They are still deputy sheriffs and have peace officer powers when they're working.
Hmm. What are some of the civilian posts that you oversee?
We have our people that work in our records that process the paperwork, help the civilians with permits and different things like that. And then mainly those are the ones there. We have some that are service officers that work in patrol, and they'll be transferring our vehicles, maybe taking a cold call, past tense call that doesn't require an officer.
Mm-hmm. I see every once in a while you'll drive down the road and you'll see like a sheriff vehicle go by and it says out of service on it. Who's driving those?
Probably we could have those service officers could have a cadet, which is a young man or woman, looking for law enforcement, and they shuttle the vehicles in for service, repairs, and such things. Or it could be even a volunteer that we have within the sheriff's office.
And that can be confusing, I think, for some people when there's an incident, say, on the side of the road. And they just drive right on by.
Yeah, and it's hard to see that out of service site.
Right,
that is.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of nice, keeps everybody else on their toes.
Yeah, you don't know if it's in service or out of service.
That's right. When I come out of behind you, you don't get to see that sign.
Yeah.
It is kind of funny. Well, I don't think people realize how much contact you have that sheriff's offices in general have with the city police departments, the FBI, the DEA, the highway patrol. I mean, you guys almost wind up being, at least from what I've seen, you wind up being like the glue. Because you cover all the areas of the county that aren't specific to something else.
And even then, the cities have the police chief and they have their jurisdictions, but we still cover the cities. Our jurisdiction can go into the cities. We have to work with our counterparts, our allies, with the day-to-day operations, but also, more importantly, within emergencies. And we saw some big emergencies within this last year. With the fires, such as we were hit with the car fire, and then Butte County was hit with the camp fire, and we rely on allied agencies. We had to, our fire, for the car fire went on for a month, burned about 260,000 plus acres, destroyed thousands of homes and structures, and we had patrols going, but we had to rely on law enforcement mutual aid. We just call it LEMA, and there was officers from all of our surrounding counties, probation departments, paroles, Fish and Wildlife through the state, California Highway Patrol, and the California National Guard assisting us in the patrols, the roadblocks, evacuations, notifications, and we would not be able to function if it wasn't for law enforcement mutual aid. Even down at Butte County, they had the same thing going on for law enforcement mutual aid there as well.
And you guys deal with all the little back roads and the byways, so you're really good at geography.
We're a small Northern California agency for the folks listening from other areas, population of about 177,000. And so the main population base is city of Redding, and that's a population of about 90,000. And
the geographic area is
geographic is huge. Our county is 3,850 square miles, a lot of areas to cover, a lot of national forest lands, and back roads, as you said.
Yeah, and you guys wind up on calls to all those places.
Oh, yes,
so when things break out, you guys have likely been there.
Also, within California, many of the sheriffs are also the coroner. And it's not that they do the autopsies, but they're responsible for determining cause, manner, and mechanism of death. And in Shasta County, I'm also the coroner, sheriff coroner, and we have a forensic pathologist that performs the autopsies and determines the cause of death. And we have other staff working there investigating sudden deaths, accidental deaths, homicides, suicides, those sorts of things.
We've been watching a lot of crime drama during the vacation. So we're all caught up on crime. Don't move to Colorado Springs. We've been watching a series. It's like,
wow, a lot of people going on there.
A lot of people die in Colorado Springs. Yikes.
Yeah.
All right, we have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Be told you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straighten the curve. Yeah.
Wouldn't be right if we didn't have a Little Dukes of Hazzard. All right, so before we leave the idea of coordinated law enforcement, we should probably bring up the unpleasantness that took place over the holiday. You guys work with, well, you're supposed to work with, and ideally your job is best when you work with DEA, ICE, Highway Patrol, all the people who have all the different responsibilities and specialties. It's no different than like a GP working with
correct. It's
surgeons.
It's a team effort, and we have to be able to communicate with our other law enforcement partners as well, both on the local level, state level, and federal level.
The California, in their infinite wisdom, passed this.
Chose not to due to a law, Senate Bill 54, that was signed into law by our governor, declaring California as a sanctuary state. And in that, it prohibits sheriffs from communicating with our federal partners, such as ICE, to let them know that there is an illegal alien in custody. And when that illegal alien is being released, there are some 800 plus laws, primarily felony laws involving violence, that allow law enforcement, sheriffs, to communicate with ICE. But there's a lot of them that don't, such as a misdemeanor charge like petty theft or vandalism or a DUI, driving while impaired. And that we'd be restricted from communicating with ICE to advise them of that.
So if someone gets arrested, turns out they're here illegally from whatever country, and they've committed a fairly, you know, important crime, something bad, robbed somebody and beat them and all this sort of thing, and they're being let out of jail, they should be deported.
Correct.
That would be the smart
and we
the
should
smart
be
thing
able,
for
and
us
we should
to
be
do.
Able to communicate with ICE regarding that. Now, that
because you don't deport anybody.
No, that's the responsibility of the federal government. We're not the immigration police, but that's why we have the federal government and ICE to enforce our immigration
laws. But
you
run the jail.
That's right.
So you know where the guy was last.
Right. And the scenario that you just said of robbery, maybe beating the person with a violent felony assault, we would be able to communicate with ICE on that. But with a misdemeanor violation, like I said earlier, from a misdemeanor DUI or vandalism, no matter how bad that person is, maybe they have gang affiliations, a long history of violence, and they're here illegally, we would still be prohibited in communicating with ICE regarding that person.
Would you be able to communicate with ICE if, let's say, you pulled somebody over on a traffic violation, they were illegal, but they came up in the system as wanted for a felony warrant or something like that?
Now, if they were wanted for the felony warrant, the officer could obviously arrest for that felony warrant, take them to jail, and book them on the felony warrant. If the violation of that felony was not one of the 800 plus exceptions within SB 54, we would not be able to communicate with ICE.
800 exceptions?
Yeah. And of course, you
have to. So what's not accepted?
Mainly what you were just saying, the felony crimes and crimes of violence. There are a few misdemeanor crimes, mainly violent ones, that you can communicate with ICE on that.
But we keep hearing about these people that were, I don't know, their crimes sounded serious to me, and yet they were let out and either the police department or the sheriff's office, whoever had them, was prohibited from calling ICE.
It depends on, again, what that law is and what the arrest was for. Now, there are some ways that ICE can work around that. Many of the times the roster is posted, the jail roster is posted on the Internet.
Who's sleeping over that
and
night?
And then seeing who's in custody. And then also there's some other ways. There's some programs called Victim Information Notification Every Day, VINE. And that lets people know where this person is. You can sign up online, and when the person is getting ready to be transferred to another jail or let out, it can notify people. It was made for victims of domestic violence, but then ICE can also sign up for that and then be notified when a person is getting ready to be released, and if they can make it to the jail or be standing outside waiting when the person is released, and they could take them into custody and start deportation.
So, not really a subtle question, but what's the advantage to the public of not deporting criminal illegal aliens?
There's no advantage. The person is here illegally. It is a crime to come into the United States of America not going through the immigration process. Immigration and immigrants go through a process. If you're here illegally, you are an illegal alien.
And you're a criminal.
Right. I mean, and then you commit crimes.
And then you commit crimes against the state, the people. And you can be held accountable for them. And there are people that are in jails or in prisons serving sentences for that. But now, unless they're part of the 800-plus exceptions, when they're released, we cannot notify ICE, which doesn't make any sense.
So when they were passing that law, I'm assuming that sheriffs all around the state and other law enforcement, I mean, not just you guys, but
the majority of us were opposed to it, our association I believe didn't take a stance on it, but we were working hard. Originally, when it came out, there were no exceptions to SB 54, and we worked very, very hard.
There was no way for you to call ICE up on anything.
And we explained the situation of people coming into custody for relatively minor crimes and being still gang members and having a violent past here. And so we were able to carve out those 800-plus exceptions, and we'd like to, in the future, through legislation, add to those as well.
Wow.
But I don't see SB 54 going away, especially with California being deep blue, and now the Dems having a supermajority in both of our houses of the Assembly and Senate.
It kind of blows me away. You know, back when 9/11 happened, one of the things that came out of that was a lot of the law enforcement agencies weren't sharing information with each other.
Right.
On these folks, and that led to the ability of them to commit that crime. Aren't we kind of going down the same road again now by tying the hands of?
You're seeing it time and time again. A year or two ago, there was a citizen of San Francisco who was murdered by an illegal alien who had a stolen firearm from a federal officer. The federal officer's car was burglarized, broken into, and there was a gun stolen. And then in court, he claimed that he found it and dropped it, and the gun went off and killed the person. And it was in, of course, a San Francisco court. The jury believed that.
Where imaginary guns shoot people all the time.
Right. And the jury found the person not guilty.
Wow.
Yeah.
Stunning. And so then last week,
An officer from the Newman Police Department, and that's located in Central California in the Stanislaus County area, performed a traffic stop on an individual, and that person shot and killed him on Christmas Day, right around December 26th, actually, the next day after early morning hours, and he was shot and killed. There was an extensive manhunt going on for over 2 days throughout California. And then he was eventually located in Kern County, Bakersfield, California, several hundred miles to the south. And he was being harbored and concealed by his relatives, brothers, were also arrested. And this person was an illegal alien. And he had ties to the Sereno gangs. And he had prior arrests for DUI.
In this country.
In this country, in California. And as a result of him still being here, killed a peace officer who...
Who was actually a real immigrant who went through immigration.
Yes.
Brought his family here from India.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And leaves behind a wife and a child a few months old.
On Christmas.
And then his services will be forthcoming this next week.
So now we get the pleasure of running this scumbag through our legal system and locking him up and feeding him for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
It was
tragic, and we've seen other instances of that within California and other places. And it's a shame that our legislatures do more to protect illegal aliens than they do the citizens of California. And it's just a shame.
Yeah.
We've done some shows with the Remembrance Project, and they are out of, I should know this, New Mexico? I think it's New Mexico. In fact, I'm sure it is. Anyway, and that is a coalition of people whose family members and friends have been murdered by illegal aliens. I had no idea the numbers were as high as they are. Very, very high. It's a huge issue. So you guys can't do anything about it. I guess that was one thing I wanted to make sure we covered today is the fact that you don't make the laws. You just carry them out.
Right. And
so people get mad. You know, why doesn't the sheriff's office do this or that? Or why don't they hold him in the jail? And in a lot of cases, the legislature has made laws that prevent you.
Excuse me. Our charge is to not only enforce the law, but we have to comply with the law. We can't violate it. The counties and the cities are essentially subsidiaries of California and need to follow California law. And that's the unfortunate part. Rather not, even if we disagree with it, unless the law is found to be unconstitutional, we have to apply it and comply with it.
How much time do you have to, when they come up with a thing like that, do you have time to get those things sorted out? I was speaking with a police chief in another town, and they were talking about this new law about not being able to ask anybody under 15 questions without the public defender.
Right. Yeah, that's a new law that came into effect in California as well. If a person is arrested, we cannot ask them questions until we get in touch. And then now there's an on-call public defender that we have to call prior to questioning of the individual. And
you can't even ask them how old they are, though.
We could ask them that. That's a non-interrogation question. So we can ask them their name, address, pertinent information, but we can't say, did you commit this crime? That's
right.
That's an investigative
probing.
Which
you can find out how old
yeah.
they are. Okay,
because
yeah, he was saying,
questions.
I don't think I can even ask them. They hadn't. Has that gone into effect yet?
Yes.
Okay.
That is in effect. Yeah, we can ask them those questions, name, address, pertinent information like that.
So if the public defender decides not to show up?
They can get a telephone call to the public defender, and the public defender could talk with that juvenile, their client, and any defense attorney worth their weight generally will say, don't talk to law enforcement. You have the right to remain silent.
So then what do you do with them?
Well, if we have enough to arrest, we could arrest and book them into juvenile hall or the juvenile rehabilitation facility.
You just can't talk to them.
We just can't talk to them. But we have to have enough evidence to be able to make that arrest based upon probable cause to book them. If we don't want to book them, we can write up the report, finish the investigation, talk to any witnesses, look at the evidence, and then submit that report to the district attorney. And then the district attorney can review the facts of the case and make a determination if there will be criminal charges and then swear out a warrant for the individual.
Your life just keeps getting more complicated.
It is.
All this stuff, it's like, I don't know, every morning you get up, you got to look at the rule book. What is it, 7 feet thick now?
It's getting there, yeah.
I don't know how they keep track of all this.
And there was some 2,500 bills that were pieces of legislation that attempted to be laws last year in California, and it usually runs right around in that area.
And how many went through?
Probably the majority of them. I can't remember how many, but it's a lot of them. So, and it carries the spectrum. It's just not on like criminal justice system.
You don't get to like shut down for a week and everybody, all right, everybody sit down. We're going to look at all the new laws. I mean, this all goes on the ground while you're working, while the stuff's happening.
Absolutely. Like within our own Sheriff's Association, we have legislative analysts and people working in Sacramento and in the under the Golden Dome in Sacramento. And keeping us advised of legislation, and then we take stances on legislation, whether to support, oppose, or stay neutral on them, and we stay engaged. And we have phone calls generally weekly while the legislators are in session, and we work hard to either...
Keep the nutty stuff out?
You keep the nutty stuff out and pass laws that are basically good laws.
Citizenry right? needs to help you with keeping the nutty stuff out. We have to take a really quick break here. We are chatting with Shasta County Sheriff Tom Basenko. You are listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Inside of Chicago, back in the USA, back in the bad old days. In the heat of a summer night, in the land of the dollar bill, when the town of Chicago died, and they talk about it still. When a man named Al Capone tried to make that town his own, and he called his gang to war with the forces of the law, I heard my mama cry. I heard her pray the night Chicago died. Brother, what a night it really was. Brother, what a fight it really was. Glory be. I heard my mama.
Prowl the streets at night. I howl when I get your scent. I turn on my flashing light. I sit in the shadow, waiting for a bite. And if you see a grin in your rearview mirror, it's a hungry black and white. I'm a police.
In my endless quest for law enforcement music.
Okay. Interesting little bump music.
Yeah. You wake up in the night and you go, I think I'm going to write a song called I'm a Police Car. I couldn't resist.
Tom, we got some folks that want to talk about this Hawaii.
But let's finish Sanctuary City first.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Just because we had some, we had a phone caller who wanted to know, how do we get rid of the Sanctuary City law?
There'd be... a couple of ways to do that. Number one, you'd have to find a legislator to carry a piece of legislation that would repeal Senate Bill 54. If a legislator did that, it'd be unlikely that that would make its way through the legislature with, the supermajority of the legislature being Dems and that had made it vote for it. And even if it did make it through the legislature with our new governor-elect Gavin Newsom, I'm sure that he would veto that. The other way is people would have to collect a number of signatures to put the issue on the ballot as a proposition to repeal Senate Bill 54. And those would be the other ways. Or determine if it went to a court of law that somehow it was unconstitutional. And usually they go through the Attorney General looks at these laws as they go through for the analyzing it and believes that they're constitutional, but the only other way is if it was declared unconstitutional through a court of law.
Is anybody suing over it?
Not that I'm aware of.
I didn't think so. Okay, so back to the people that you elected.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who make the laws.
That's correct.
So, all right. And you were saying that... we don't have this going rampant throughout the country. States are declaring sanctuary cities because they figured out it was a dumb idea.
I'm not aware of any. But there are a number of cities and counties within California that have said, no, we don't agree with this, and we're a non-sanctuary city or county. However, that's more of a statement versus a legal avenue to do because, again, they still have to comply with state law.
Bummer.
Yeah. And then, of course, the sanctuary law is also in conflict with federal law regarding immigration and illegal aliens. So,
yeah, go ahead and carry out the laws if you can figure out which one's in charge of the other one.
Much the same as it is in marijuana. There's been, I think, 39 states that have legalized marijuana in some form, but yet marijuana is still illegal federally because it is a Schedule I drug.
Yeah.
Muddies the water.
Yeah.
I think anybody that knows you, Tom, knows you're a big supporter of the Second Amendment.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no question about that. Let's talk about this Young versus Hawaii decision and what that's all about.
It's my understanding that within Hawaii, you could either carry concealed or open carry. And open carry is basically carry it on your hip. It's able to be seen. And then they made a law that it was illegal for open carry. And it's very difficult, if not impossible, to get a concealed weapons carry permit in Hawaii. And then they sued and said that, we could open carry. It's a constitutional right. It went to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and they said no. But then it was going to go to an en banc, which means it gets more justices together as a group. And I think they eventually agreed with the main court. And that's making its way through. Now there's individuals in California that want to do the same thing. In California, we have the ability to carry concealed with a concealed weapons license. However, it is... California is a may issue state, that it goes with the discretion and judgment of either the issuing authority, which is generally a chief of police or a sheriff. It varies widely in California. Los Angeles, I think, has some 10 million in population, and the Los Angeles County issues about 197 permits.
Right.
In Orange County, a population of about 3.2 to 3.5 million, there are around 15,000 permits. In Shasta County, we have about 177,000 population, and we have nearly 10,000 permits.
Right.
And how many of those people running around with concealed weapons permits are shooting people?
None. Well, I won't say none, because we have had shootings. But those shootings...
Okay, but shooting them, like, you know, hiding in the bushes,
yeah,
kind of thing.
None. We've had where people with them has used their firearm to protect themselves, ended up shooting an individual, and then that goes before the district attorney for review, and the district attorney in that case said, no, they were justified in using lethal force. So these it's just not that you hand out permits. Sacramento has over 1 million population, and they have somewhere around 10,000 as well. The sheriff there is a good sheriff, and when he took office, he's now working going on his third term. He took office, they only had a few hundred permits in Sacramento County, and now they have close to around 10,000 or so. And so these are individuals that have to undergo training. They have to undergo an extensive background, both at the local level and state and federal levels. And then it's at the discretion of the issuing authority to issue that permit.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're very fortunate in Shasta County to have that ability.
Well, it's kind of crazy, because at some point, if you can't defend yourself, I mean, you guys can't be everywhere.
That's correct.
I mean, you just can't be everywhere.
It's impossible.
In the county, we've already described the geography. How many deputies do you have, like, if you're outside the city limits?
For the unincorporated area, yeah. Shasta County, generally, we have 3 to 4 deputies working on a shift, a 12-hour shift. So 7 in the morning, 7 at night, 7 at night to 7 in the morning, plus a supervisor. So anywhere from 4 to 5 people working. Sometimes it's as little as 4.
Okay, so they have a thing. Something happens.
In some areas of the county, the more rural areas, there is not 24 hours of coverage. The person goes home, the deputy, and is subject to call out after their shift. And so there is not someone actively patrolling in some areas of the county.
So you could, conceivably, if something happened, you could wait kind of a long time.
Depending
you can be
on
your
is.
Own, depending on if where was, you are and what time of day.
What we call a cold call, say it was a past tense burglary, it could be a number of hours before we get there. Even then, just with the geography of our county and the layout, if there's an emergency, it could still take us quite some time to get there, not only just with mileage, but with weather conditions, because we do have areas that are mountainous and right. Subject to snow and ice. So, but the...
And a lot of our counties up here will have one person on.
Yeah,
maybe two.
If they have them on, again, some of the more rural counties, smaller than Shasta, have no deputies on duty in the late evening and early morning hours because they're just so small in population and for their makeup of their organization. But back to concealed carry, so an open carry with this Young v. Hawaii, there's working on a court case in California similar to it to sue because if the citizen is unable to obtain a concealed weapons permit, they're not able to open carry because that's illegal. And now they'll be suing for that and or trying to get a shell issue state there where basically if they're clear to own guns, the issue
so if they're not a criminal.
Shell issue. Now, in those instances, there's plenty of people that have some instances of drug backgrounds, arrests and or investigations or convictions for theft and other things and or some mental health issues. Maybe they have not been placed into mental health custody for 5150, being able to care for themselves or others or suicidal. But they still have issues. Those aren't necessarily all the people that you want carrying concealed weapons, or people with a lot of alcohol violations, or maybe alcohol or drug addictions also. Again, those aren't people that you want carrying firearms.
So you can make those decisions as they come, but the just flat prohibition.
And we talked about a number of new sheriffs in coming in January. The most of them will be sworn in on January 7th. And in some counties that have one Bay Area county, they have about 500,000 population, but only issue less than 100 CCW permits. But the new sheriff there coming in, he wants to redo the concealed carry practice and policy there. And so he looks at expanding the ability for citizens of his county to have a concealed weapons permit. And that permit, unless restricted, is good for the entire state of California, with the exception of restricted or prohibited areas, such as
federal buildings and stuff.
Yeah.
So when we have a
really quick break, but when we come back, we need to talk.
Okay. I'm opening next
my
time.
My questions are good. Bill's questions.
You trumped me.
Poor Bill.
See, like, I told you could do the breaks, but he doesn't like doing the breaks.
Yeah. Who's in charge here, Bill?
I have a witness.
Yeah. We'll talk.
We'll be right back.
You're in big trouble.
There's trouble on the street tonight. I can feel it in my bones. I had a premonition that he should not go alone. I knew the gun was loaded, but I didn't think he'd kill. Everything exploded and the blood began to spill. So baby, here's your ticket with the suitcase in your hand. Here's a little money now. Do it just the way we planned. You'd be cool for 20 hours and I'll pay you 20 grand.
Sitting in a coffee shop, just minding my own affairs. When all of a sudden, this policeman caught me unaware. He said, is your name Pedro? I said, yeah, I guess so. He said, then come with me, because you're the man we've been looking for. I said, hey, man, I've been framed. Hey, no, really, man, I was framed. I never do nothing wrong, man. But every time I get the blame.
It wouldn't be right without a little Cheech and Chong.
Cheech and Chong, yeah. Some good bump music today. You know, there's also within, we've been talking about the Young v. Hawaii case, and there was another case in California. It was Peruta versus San Diego, and that was a California case. In the Peruta case, same thing. It was also combined with another case of Richards v. Yolo County and Prieto. And Prieto being the sheriff at the time. And basically they said, hey, we can't get a concealed weapons carry permit, and now it's illegal to open carry. So we have the right to keep and bear arms under the Second Amendment. And that went before court, and then it ended up in the Ninth District Court of Appeals, the same Court of Appeals that heard the Young case. And in that case, they said that it is still the sheriff's issuing authority, could be chiefs too. So it's still the issuing authority for sheriffs and chiefs' discretion whether or not to issue that concealed weapons permit. The Ninth heard that, and then the sheriff there and the state decided not to take it before an en banc of the Ninth. And so we have that somewhat conflicts with Young. And now they have a court case going before, in the process, I think, to go before the Ninth to see if they can resolve this issue within California. So there's always the court cases are changing it. There's a large amount of cases that are going through the court now. You can see those court cases if you go to the California Rifle Pistol Association website and at www.crpa.org, and that's also in their publication of the Firing Line, which is their publication they put out and keep it advanced. But there's probably at least 20 cases, both on the state and federal levels, that are going through there that you can read about. In California, January 1st being just around the corner in a few days, a number of laws that will be coming into effect. Since we've been talking about CCWs, Assembly Bill 2103 changed the law now that requires people that are getting a CCW permit or license to qualify and then shoot their gun with a passing score, a course of fire, and then also people that are renewing their CCW permits. In California, a CCW permit is good for 2 years, and you have to renew it. So that the qualification is set again by the issuing authority here in Shasta to be the sheriff. So here they'll have to shoot 4 volleys of 5 rounds at the 7-yard line and qualify with an 80% for a passing score. So 16 out of 20 must make it into a 8-ring on a what we call a B-27 target, which is a silhouette target. So that's a roughly 8.5 by 11 area that you have to get 16 rounds out of 20 from 7 yards into that area.
So each gun that's on your permit, you have to qualify with 20 rounds.
That's correct. And
so you still have to take a class when you very first start.
Yeah.
And because now, people think, I don't know, people who don't have concealed weapons permits think, I don't know what they think. I think they think you just have that and then you
now,
just...
Now they have to take a... here in Shasta, you have to take a 12-hour course if you're initially applying for one and getting your first-time permit, and that includes range time. And now they'll have to qualify with each gun they have on the permit. And here, it used to be as many as you wanted to have on the permit, but that's caused some complications for us at the sheriff's office. So now we're going to be limiting it to five guns on a permit for there. And that's kind of the average throughout the state, from 3 to 5 guns to have on there. And it's good to be more familiar with 1 or 2 platforms and versus the way the gun functions than having a whole plethora on there. The guns aren't needed for transportation. Some people put in, I need this to transport guns, and you don't need that because you can transport guns legally other ways than having a CCW. But also another law that came into effect, and this will be taking effect now, and so there's been a rush on getting people are getting in to try and get their CCWs before the first of the year so they don't have to qualify, but when they come up again, they'll have to. And then Department of Justice, the state, restricts people from renewing more than 30 days in advance, and so that makes it a little more difficult if somebody wants to get the, maybe renew with a 1 year to spare. But another bill has been Senate Bill 1346, and in the state that bans the manufacture and sale of bump stocks, which is a device that goes on to a semi-automatic rifle that allows it to fire more quickly. It does not turn it into an automatic weapon, and it does not increase the cyclic rate. That's the ability for it to go. It just makes it, you can fire a little bit more rapidly than unless you have some very good trigger skills with your finger. And a bump stock, essentially, you can do the same type of operation with a rubber band on a trigger to do it.
But they've made it sound like...
Yeah, it's a big bad thing.
Like this is some big scary thing that everybody has.
Next, they'll probably have a law to outlaw rubber bands. So...
Well, we've outlawed straws, so we probably shouldn't joke about that.
That's right. With Senate Bill 1200, before when there were restraining orders with domestic violence, law enforcement could seize or the person would have to hand in their firearms. And now it allows police to also seize ammunition and magazines to enforce that, because before you could get the guns but not the ammunition or the magazines. So this expands out the restraining order law. And then also for Assembly Bill 3129, now anybody that's been convicted of a misdemeanor domestic violence offense after January 1 will no longer be able to own or possess a firearm for the rest of their lives. There was already federal law, but now they've made it state law as well. So another big change. So right now, a person that's under the age of 21 is prohibited from purchasing a handgun. But now the Senate and the governor in their wisdom prohibits anybody under the age of 21 from purchasing a long gun from a licensed dealer. So a long gun is a rifle or a shotgun. And so that takes effect January 1 as well. And so people can serve our nation and go into the...
And they can vote.
They can vote. They can smoke.
Drive a car.
They can drive a car. They can actually get a straw at a restaurant. And but they will be unable to purchase a long gun now. And then they can go into the military and learn how to shoot fully automatic weapons. But thinking when they, if they got out before age 21, or if they wanted to purchase one in California while they were still serving, they'd be able to do that in California.
And I suppose if you live in a city, that's probably not a big inconvenience. But if you live in the country,
and there is exemptions for law enforcement and members of the military who have a valid and unexpired hunting license to be able to do that. So
there you go. That's what I was going to say. If you live out and and you're a hunter,
and then so also. Is that a phone, or is that coming up on break?
It is coming up on break. Okay, we've got about 25 seconds.
Okay, so one last one is somebody that has been hospitalized for mental health issues twice in a year or more are now would be prohibited from owning a firearm for the rest of their lives, too. So people with mental health issues going on. So that's some of the stuff that will be coming up.
Probably an awesome idea.
Yes.
And we'll talk about more laws in the next hour.
Okay.
So theme song from our favorite sheriff, Andy Griffith. On the way out, you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. My.
What did you do now, Bill?
We've been watching the homicide hunter, Joe Kenda.
Yep.
He actually solved a whole bunch of cases. That was the Colorado Springs thing that we were talking about.
Yeah.
So welcome back to We the People. This is our second hour. You can find everything about the show and all sorts of archives going back to 2010 at wethepeopleradio.us. And my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor
this hour... sponsor, Bill?
This hour, it's Team Power, our local John Deere and Kubota tractor dealer.
And lawnmowers.
No, we don't do lawnmowers. We do riding lawn equipment. And,
I'm terribly sorry. That's right. Lawnmowers makes it sound like a guy walking around.
No,
these are all riding.
These are all riders that require an operator. And you can pick up your John Deere and Kubota equipment up there and see the guys up there at Team Power. They're running a... winter special right now in the service department. You can get your equipment worked on for a discounted rate. Give them a call up there, 226-9226, or get them online at readingtractors.com. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard.
Spring will be here before you know it.
Before you know it. Yeah, Tom, you're a customer of Team Power. Mm-hmm. You bought a nice Kubota tractor up there. It was a beast. Yeah.
It was a beast.
Yeah. Beast. Yeah, but I don't know about that.
Well, a nice tractor, I'll tell
usually
you that.
Usually a beast has tires that are in excess of 6 foot tall, so.
Well, okay, it was a mini beast.
Beast in training.
Yeah. So we were talking about some of the California laws coming up.
Subject again, that never goes away.
That never goes away, and many people say, well, this is an unconstitutional law. But it doesn't become unconstitutional. It may very well be until it gets a court decision to say it is unconstitutional. And that could come from a variety of whether starting at the local courts, at the superior court level, through the California system, and then going into the federal system, and ultimately to the Supreme Court if it's heard. And then, of course, we know that there's some Supreme Court decisions, such as the Heller decision in Chicago v. McDonald, that established the ability to own and possess firearms and purchase them in different places. I also serve, I'm trying to stay up to speed on this, I also serve on the California Rifle Pistol Association on the board of directors as a law enforcement liaison. We have some other sheriffs that are on the board as well. And then I head up a group of about 30 California sheriffs and keep them informed on gun legislation and gun issues that we may wish to weigh in on at the state level or federal level as an individual sheriff. So I try and stay up on this very much. It's very near and dear to my heart. And
how do you guys keep track of all this stuff as it keeps changing?
Most of it is through emails that I get, again, through CRPA, another fine organization in California, is the Gun Owners of California, with the executive director being Sam Paredes. And I think you've had him on your show.
We love Sam.
He's a great guy. And he's another one that is there as a crusader for the Second Amendment and gun rights here in California and throughout the nation, and stays up on legislation. And then, of course, the National Rifle Association is active more on the national level. But here's a big one that's really going to torque some folks, is Assembly Bill 18. And that's just been put into a bill. And this bill has the express intent to put a excise tax on the sale of handguns and semi-automatic rifles and require the revenue be collected for that tax to go towards fund grants for the California Victim Program on more of education and prevention. But what they're trying to do is tax firearms heavily to try and outprice them for the average citizen. That's essentially what it's going to. It's not going to do anything to impact the criminal or people with mental health.
Criminals don't buy guns at stores.
No, they don't go in and buy them. They'll go out and steal them or get them through other illegitimate means. They don't follow the law. And with all the other shootings that you've seen in the news, those have been committed by criminals or people with mental health issues. And the legislators need to be addressing issues such as that with long sentences, more enforcement of the current laws that we have. But we haven't seen that. They want to keep making more laws that impact the law-abiding citizen versus the criminal or those people with mental health issues.
Have their myriad of laws actually made anybody safer?
I do not think so. No,
in general, have you seen some precipitous drop in crime?
No, in fact, there's a. I was reading an article. It was in the. I can't remember the news source, but I was reading it, and there was a study that with all the California gun laws. In fact, crime has gone up. There's been a reduction, a drop a little bit, but crime is up in California, property crimes and violent crimes. And yet we see that, but they try and enact more and more laws.
Well, while they're busy restricting the gun owners, they're letting criminals out of jail early because it's mean to keep them in jail.
Right. In fact, the governor just granted like some 145 pardons and clemency on their sentences recently. Some converted people that were on with life without possibility of parole, converted them to 25 years to life that they could have parole.
Wow.
And he's pardoned other people, which pardon excuses, says a mulligan, basically, and takes it off their record.
And weren't there some that the courts actually said, no, we can't let that guy out? Didn't they roll some back?
The court, I think, rejected three or four of those clemency and or pardons. And thankfully, we had some judges with some common sense there. And this goes against the courts, that people have been properly tried and convicted in a court of law
with
a jury of their peers. properly sentenced. And then in some of these cases where people have been convicted of murder, it goes against basically the victims. The state, the district attorney was speaking for the victims that were killed in these things, and the family members no longer have their family member there. They've been killed. They can't enjoy them. They won't see births of children, going to school, graduations, other things, because they were murdered by these people, and yet the governor saw to it to either reduce their sentence or pardon them. And that's what we're seeing in the California legislature with laws like AB 109 that released tens of thousands of people from state prison and pushed them back onto the counties. Then we saw the passage of Proposition 47 and 57 as well that reduced
many
felonies.
Those were done by the voters.
Those were done by the voters.
It's important to say who did these. So when
Proposition goes before the voters, and then bills are through the legislature.
So the legislature, who was elected by the voters, passed AB 109. Then the voters themselves put these two propositions on, and they did what?
They passed. And so they reduced many felony crimes, primarily drug-related crimes and property crimes, to misdemeanors.
And so now those kinds of crimes are going up.
Exactly.
Huh, because they're misdemeanors. Mm-hmm. Who could have seen that?
And so I don't know when the pendulum is going to swing back, but also in California, we're seeing this is the first year in at least recent history that more people, good people of California, have left California than have come into California.
Yeah, I read that. It's the first time.
2017.
Yeah, the cost of a U-Haul leaving California is extraordinarily expensive.
Yes.
The cost of bringing a U-Haul into California is very, very cheap.
Right.
Because it's all about the outgoing.
And we're seeing more businesses, good businesses, also leave California because of the restrictions and regulations on them, such as California Air Quality Board and workers' comp and other ones. And so it's making it very expensive to be in business. But this bill, if it passes, will put another big tax on gun owners wanting to buy.
And what was the bill number on that?
That was Assembly Bill 18. And then there's another one regarding peace officers in recording. That's AB 54. And so if there's some type of video recording or audio recording that law enforcement has, say a body cam, and then there's an incident, say an officer-involved shooting, the agency would be required that has that recording to release it within 45 days. And it requires the agency to provide an estimated date for the disclosure, and then the recording must be made public within 45 days. So we'll see that. Senate Bill 55 is going to add to the list of prohibited persons. And so people that have certain misdemeanors will now be restricted and prohibited from owning firearms for 10 years that they want to make it, add to that. And then that can involve alcohol intoxication or possession of certain controlled substances that would violate it. So if they got a misdemeanor conviction of that, then people would be restricted from owning firearms for 10 years. Now, that could include, it doesn't say what the list of laws are as of yet, but that could include misdemeanor DUI. And so maybe a person makes a bad judgment call, bad decision, gets picked up for driving under the influence, gets convicted of a DUI, could be restricted from owning and possessing firearms for 10 years. That means even in their house.
This isn't like you can't carry them out in the street, in your house.
You could not possess them.
That's ridiculous.
We got to take a quick break here, and we'll come back. We of course have more bad laws for you for the rest of the hour.
Do we have any good news?
I tried to have a little bright spot with the music, but that's it. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
If we catch a criminal, when we catch a criminal, it's nothing we can.
that's when all these laws go in. There was more, but we're not going to hear it.
So we were talking before we went on break that if a person had been hospitalized for mental health issues, basically in California it's called 5150 of the Welfare and Institution Code, that if you're in danger to yourself or others, i.e. suicidal, excuse me, or are gravely disabled and unable to care for yourself, then they would be prohibited in having a firearm for the rest of their life. I mean, that also kind of makes some pretty good sense. No, but there's going to be a lot of gun laws. This is only the start of the new legislator that's coming in the first part of January.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to see, I think, a fairly large amount of gun control laws coming in. And our governor-elect, Grab'em Gavin Newsom, has already said, basically, if it comes before him, it goes to his desk, and it's a gun control law, he's going to sign it.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah, be prepared.
Common sense is out the window.
Yeah, so we're going to see that. Of course, the California Rifle Pistol Association and Gun Owners of California, individual law enforcement officers such as sheriffs are going to be engaged in that, but it's going to be hard to curb that because of the supermajority currently held within the California legislature.
But well, those will still have to go to a vote, won't they?
Well, they go to a vote of the legislators. It won't go to the vote of the people. Those are bills through
people
the legislature. You know, I'm a bill, only a bill. Mm-hmm. And it'll go before the legislature. And if it passes through the legislature and goes to the governor's desk and he signs it, that's law, unless it's challenged for the constitutionality of it.
Right.
So what a great combination. I mean, you look at all the, you know, all these things coming together, you know, letting criminals out of jail, reducing, large, important crimes, right. Things that you would be afraid.
Yeah, to misdemeanors.
Right.
It should keep everybody on their toes. Those are now all misdemeanors.
It's kind of a perfect storm.
And then disarming the public.
Right.
And law enforcement is bad, so of course we have to do everything we can to keep you guys from,
They're making more law enforcement personnel records, public information now, such as that videotape, and then they can also challenge our, within our personnel files, that if a person is involved in a critical incident, because there's a Public Records Act request, they can look at ours and looking for either a deception, dishonesty, sexual misconduct and others for that to attack the credibility of the officer.
It's already incredibly difficult to find good personnel.
It is.
I guess we should tell people about that a little bit. And I don't know if it's every state, but I know in California.
We're seeing a lot of it, not only in California, but it is kind of a national phenomenon where people are not wanting to go into law enforcement. It is a rewarding career, even with the challenges that we're seeing now in society. But it is very difficult to recruit people. Part of it is the negativity that we're seeing nationwide of the rhetoric about law enforcement. Others that you do have to work night shifts and varying shifts and holidays. I worked many a holiday and missed either the holiday itself with family or, and I'm not whining or complaining about it, it's just a matter of fact.
It's something that affects you guys.
Or able to miss your kids' Christmas or whatever program that it is because we're out there working. Mm-hmm. And on holidays, Christmas Eve and Christmas, Thanksgiving, there's still men and women out on patrol, patrolling and doing their job to protect the community. But we're not seeing that. We're all competing for the same person. And I go to our Sheriff's Association meetings, and we hear it time and time again from large agencies such as Los Angeles, or small agencies, whether it be MODOC or Shasta, we're all looking for that same person. We're having difficulties in recruiting them.
And well, the Highway Patrol has to go through an extraordinary number of people.
I've heard that they have to go through about 100,000 applicants to get about 100 people on the street.
Isn't that mind-blowing?
That is just mind-blowing, yeah. Absolutely.
But you have a lot of people that are using drugs, so you have a lot of recreational marijuana use, which is eliminating them.
We see dishonesty in the backgrounds, where we go before a lie detector test, and the person goes, oh, You're going to do a lie detector test? Yeah. Well, you know, I said that I don't use drugs. I think I may have misquoted that, or now I remember. I think
misremembered.
I think I did drugs recently, and then that shoots them. No pun intended. Gets them out of the background process because they're being dishonest. So if they're going to be dishonest when the application process, what about under stress?
Right.
And writing that difficult report, and we don't want to see.
You don't want them out there alone.
Right. So we see that. So it makes it a big challenge to do that. Sometimes we see very bad credit. People go, well, what's that got to do with it? And it goes towards maturity, mm-hmm. decision making. If you have a huge credit debt, you're also subject to, could be, to corruption and or bribery. Mm-hmm. And how did you get that debt? Is it due to medical expenses that were out of your control? Is it due to student loans, which you were getting and bettering it? That makes a little bit of a difference. But if you're just buying stuff, that's probably not a good decision making if you're over limit, if you're overliving your current limit. And so that we look at those.
Yeah, those
very
have to be, they have to be factors when you're putting mm-hmm. a gun on somebody and yeah. putting them in charge.
So here they have to be. I mean, you can't just have a guy who, you know, can go out and, like the Andy Griffith show, right? You know, you can't just go be Barney One Bullet anymore. You have to be really smart. I mean, there's a lot to know.
There's a lot of physical requirements, a lot of educational requirements. You go through for the Law Enforcement Academy in general, that's 23 weeks of extensive training. For large agencies like San Bernardino, Los Angeles, PD, and Sheriff, and California Highway Patrol, their academies are 6 months long. That they mm-hmm. go through. And so it's a lot of training to do that. And to then, after they complete the academy, you go through at least 17 weeks of training in the field training, to get ready. And so you can wash out there. So from initial testing to putting a person on the street after the academy can be a year or more. And that's a significant amount of investment.
Yeah, that's a lot of money to invest in somebody to see if they're going to make it or not.
Right. Right, so it's a very competitive to get that, but we're not seeing the applicants come in, and we are seeing that in other places.
Is it tougher in the rural areas or in the city areas?
A little bit of both, maybe a little bit more in the rural areas because generally the rural areas don't pay as well as the urban areas.
I was just thinking maybe the cost of living was a little lower.
Well, the cost of living is lower, but then the pay is lower.
Yeah.
And so that makes it difficult to attract, especially here in Shasta County, our pay is lower. And so, but even though the cost of living is lower, you still have you're paying the same amount for gas.
Yeah.
Those homes
groceries
still cost and groceries and everything. Homes still generally cost about the same unless you're comparing them to the Bay Area where it's like $2,500 or $3,500 a month for a studio apartment or something.
Right.
And that's driving people out of the metropolitan areas too. There's a lot of people that live in Sacramento, California that commute to the Bay Area every day.
Now, do you have a high turnover of say existing officers that transfer to other departments for more money?
We are seeing that, especially here in the local area. They might transfer to the Redding Police Department or others for that pay. Although that's slowed down somewhat because of changes in the retirement systems too. If you leave under one system, and one's called 3% at 50, 3 at 50 retirement, and now they have it to like you might be 2.7 at 57. So sometimes they don't want to leave because of that change.
Mm.
But we are seeing them. I mean,
much movement between city PDs and sheriff's office.
Where even the police departments aren't seeing as much moving for lateral transfers for that. So a lot of them are sending people to the academy. We're sending four people that are starting December 31st to the academy. And those are people that came within our organization from the jail, from a correctional deputy, and are going to the law enforcement academy. Excuse me.
Because how hard is it to become a person at the jail?
It's still a requirement. They go through a background, and then they also have to go through a psychological exam and pass that as well, both for the jail and for deputy sheriff. And so some wash out on the psychological exam.
And once they've done all that, and they turn out to be like a good person, you guys kind of eyeball them and like, hey,
absolutely.
You guys
and that's
wanna...
the advantage of the folks working at the jail. We have a chance to see them and their work ethic and performance and what's going on there, and then we can send them to the academy. And again, that's a significant amount to send a person to the academy of giving them per diem, their meals and housing and the equipment, cars and all that, just for the academy, and then still get them here.
Hmm.
So if they go through the academy here, is there a requirement that they come and be an officer here for a period of time?
We are just getting that.
So like the Army?
Kind of. We're getting that contract approved. And then if they leave within 3 years, they could be responsible for reimbursing Shasta County for their education for that. And we're seeing that in other areas of California work, too, for agencies. But then some other agencies are saying, okay, fine, if you want to come to work for us, we'll buy out your contract. There's some agencies that are giving a $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 signing bonus if you'll sign up with their agency.
Wow.
Yeah, probably in the long run, it saves them money than having to train.
Some are paying moving expenses. And it's really difficult for us to find officers that want to work in the very rural areas, such as we call it a resident spot. And it could be a small...
Like Bernie?
Bernie, Shingletown, Lakehead. Those are small rural communities within our county. And it requires a person be self-supervising, being able to think on their feet, sometimes without the options of having backup right there. Backup could be half hour, hour, or more away. And so they have to be an experienced officer. You just don't want to send a rookie up there. And so hard to attract those. There was a recent change in our contract negotiations in which people that work in those areas could get a $5,000 a year stipend or bonus for working in those areas.
Hmm.
So we'll see if that helps
makes
out some.
It- A little bit easier.
We haven't had people break down the door for it to come, but it certainly can help.
Right.
Wow. I'm still always shocked at the 100,000 people to find 100 to work
again,
at the Highway Patrol.
Again, they wash out in backgrounds and then in the academy washing out there as well. And so it's been very difficult for all law enforcement agencies of hiring qualified personnel.
Unbelievable. Well, Deb was a Highway Patrolman.
Yeah.
Who's badge number
2714.
2714. I think they're into the 22,000 area now.
Yeah.
So when did he serve? That was probably back in the 60s?
Oh, yeah. I think Bill's really old. I think he retired in 75.
Yeah, so he went through some difficult time of the late 50s and 60s and civil unrest.
Oh, yeah.
He was at all the big riots.
You're seeing history repeat itself now. But
Yep. No, he was at the Berkeley riots.
1.0.
He had guys in his department that were at the Watts riots.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that was...
Do you have his badge?
No, I don't. Oh. I think my mom has his badge.
Oh, but it's within the family. That's quite a keepsake to have, especially a number of the 2000 era.
Yeah. No, he's we got the badge, and it has the little bar on it. And, he had quite a history with the department.
Yeah, very nice. Well, thank you.
He told me one time that we were talking about serving on CHP because my brother went to the academy, and he said in his 25 or 30 years that he was on the job, he said, I only had to take my gun out of the holster one time in a line of duty. And he said, today it's every day almost.
Yeah, it's off the hook.
Yeah, it's totally different game.
Mm-hmm.
So, wildly different.
Yeah.
All right, we have to take a really quick break, and then we'll be right back with Sheriff Tom Basenko. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm sure there's been a whole bunch of people that would be offended by listening to that as well. You're under arrest, but probably not on this listening audience.
Kevin, it's bizarre. If you listen to the whole song, he's singing this to his girlfriend. I was like, okay.
Oh.
That's the one date relationship.
Yeah.
Let's play You're Under Arrest. It's like,
we're down into the last less than 30 minutes now of the show. I mean, 2 hours have flown by pretty quick.
Yeah. We talk about crime all day.
We could talk about crime all day, but another important aspect is to be prepared and try not to be a victim of a crime. I mean, there's a lot of things that people can do that help them from becoming a victim, and some of it's pretty simple. I mean, lock your car. Don't leave the keys in the ignition.
Don't leave your purse on the front seat or your wallet.
We see a lot of that, especially the purses in the front seat that maybe the ladies are going to, or doesn't necessarily have to be a lady, but someone's going to the gym that has a purse, and that they leave it on the front
seat. Nice save.
The crook comes by. Well, they know that they're probably in the gym. They're going to be there for an extended period of time, at least for an hour. And then they smash the window, steal the purse, and then they can go out and start charging right away. Sometimes they make a phone call and start buying stuff online before it's noticed. Even within the gym, some people sneak in the gym, go back in and look for the unlocked lockers that don't have a lock on them, and then look in the lockers and steal things from them as well.
Wow.
So that's one way. If you're going to, you know, maybe put it in the trunk at least. Make sure that no one's watching, and that helps. And again, lock the car. Don't leave your keys in the ignition, especially if you lock the car first, and don't leave them in the ignition.
Yeah.
But same thing, if you can secure your homes. Many people still don't lock their homes.
And they've got their garage door opener in their vehicle.
Yep.
Leave the unlocked vehicle in the driveway, lock the house.
Leave their garage door open, and a lot of times people will come by. There's nobody in the garage, nobody in the front yard, and they stop the car, run in. Maybe grab some power tools or something, and they're gone. And so, again, keep your garage secure. And, of course, now there's a lot of different type of the camera systems you can install that are wireless or wired, or the doorbells that have camera systems on them that help notify you even if you're not home.
How about just leave the lights on?
That's another plus. Trimming the shrubbery around your home so people don't have places to hide. Not that it has to be a barren, desolate yardscape, but at least the big bushes by the front.
We're not at the point where we need moats yet.
Not yet. Well, maybe in some places. But yeah. But the big bushes right by the front door, trim them down a little bit. Someone could hide behind that and or get in. Locking the back doors, too, because a lot of people will go in through, a side fence and then have access to the side door to the garage, break into the garage, and usually what's in the garage are tools and pry devices that access into the interior of the home. And again, keep things locked up. If a person's a gun owner, we've talked a lot about guns. Being a responsible gun owner is if you can have your weapons secured as well. Certainly you want access to them for self-protection, but you might want to lock up the other ones, and we want to keep young hands away from firearms until they're properly educated. So again, we see accidents involving children getting access to firearms. But lock those up, get a good quality gun safe, and lock up your guns, and then also your important papers, life insurance and deeds and wills and stuff like that. That can also go in the gun safe. And then also a tip for all the folks out there, if you have a gun safe, go out and buy, like if your spouse, significant other, buy that piece of jewelry or a present, wrap it up in a nondescript wrapping paper. And so you know what's going to happen when you forget that important date, like a birthday or an anniversary or something, then you're accused of forgetting it. You go to the gun safe, open it up, and say, ta-da, surprise, there you are, and you're the hero.
I thought about it all along.
Yeah.
There you go.
So,
I was totally prepared.
Yes, there you go. That can also be preparedness as well. But also, you know, lock your homes up and secure them. But then also here in the North State and other parts of California, be prepared for wildfire, and that's about clearing fuels away from your house, dry grasses, brush, trees with low-hanging branches. Those are all called ladder fuels. Clearing that away and then making that secure as much as you can. If you can get 100-foot clearance at least, that's good. And then also having what we call a go bag and be ready to go. And that's maybe having a 2 or 3 day supply of clothes packed, maybe copies of your medical prescriptions, phone charger, because people usually forget their phone chargers. Having your phone charger, a list of people, as I say, of your phone numbers. If your phone goes dead or you forget it, at least you have other numbers to call that let people know where you are. And your prescription meds for your pets, if you do. And then some.
One thing we saw a lot with the fire, as soon as we saw smoke, I headed for the gas station.
That's a very good point.
I got to tell you, boy, by that night, because the power had gone out,
right?
Power goes out, there's no gas station. I couldn't believe it. There were hundreds of people in line at the gas station.
Have your car fueled, or at least maybe not let it get below a half tank. Mm-hmm. And that's being prepared, because a lot of times in the communities here in the North State that saw had to evacuate because of a potential dam failure and or the fires, they're running out of gas, or it's in a panic of everybody. You're seeing a big long line of cars, and then sometimes there's fights and collisions and stuff.
And that happened.
Oh yeah,
I mean, I was out there that night when that fire went through Reading, and it was. I saw things I never would have expected.
And so we had one of our patrol vehicles were rammed. A person went through an intersection, rammed the patrol car.
Yeah.
I think it was probably in a panic. Luckily, the deputy wasn't hit, but it did damage our patrol car. There were other public safety vehicles that were being rammed because people were panicking. And you don't have to wait for an evacuation notice to evacuate. If you want to evacuate and leave, probably err on the side of caution and leave ahead of time. Don't wait to the last minute to try and hook up your RV or load up the horses.
You always hear about so many people who were putting things in their vehicle and then wound up having to abandon the vehicle and jump in a fire truck to be rescued or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't always pay to wait.
During the car fire, we were out on patrol, and we ended up picking up two people that were walking alongside the road in a part that had already been overrun by fire. And they were surrounded by fire, and we loaded them up in the car and took them with us. And they could have ended up being a victim of the fire, getting killed or something.
Sure.
And so we saw, you know, two-lane roadways turn into one-lane roadways of people trying to leave at the last minute, get a jump on it and try and leave ahead of time. And if they have large livestock, such as horses, a lot of people don't have horse trailers to transport them in.
Right.
And or the horses have never been in a trailer, and that causes a whole new rodeo to try and get horses loaded up in a hurry. Take the time and leave ahead of time. If you get that evacuation notice, leave. We don't take those evacuation notices lightly. And then if you don't leave, and then the emergency erupts that you're getting overrun, or maybe your house is on fire, then fire personnel and public safety personnel are putting their own lives at risk trying to go in and do a rescue. And that's not a good situation either.
And that's where all that communication ahead of time with all the different things you guys do and all the agencies you work with, that's where that all pays off.
Yeah, and sometimes the fire is so fast moving, and we've seen that here locally in the car fire. We saw it in the camp fire as well. That was in another county. That this fire was so fast moving that notifications can't go out fast enough, or landlines are the damaged and that can't go out via landline. Cell phone towers are damaged, or they're overrun with cell phone traffic and they can't get out the emergency notifications.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we work with TV and radio stations on putting information out, and radio and news media with like the newspaper that all have mainly social media websites and social media pages. But again, you have to be in tune to all of that.
Yeah, there's a real good possibility you're gonna be out there on your own.
Yeah, you don't have to wait for that evacuation notice to evacuate. And then we try to go door to door, knock on doors, give people evacuation notices, and still they don't want to leave. And they're endangering themselves, their family, their children in some cases.
Yep.
And we've seen that. And then they can also become victims of the fire. We saw that here in Shasta as well, that some people chose not to leave, and then their home was overrun, and they ended up dying in the fire.
Yeah, campfire, and people couldn't get out.
Right. And there was people alongside the roadway in the campfire that perished in their vehicles.
Yeah. Don't fool around.
It's so now
just
we're
nuts.
All in the rebuilding process. Shasta County is
waiting for next.
It was way ahead of the process of clearing off lots and securing the land for erosion. They put in some wattles, which are straw-filled tubes to help for erosion, getting some straw on the hillsides, and that's helped. We haven't received a deluge of rain at one time, so it allows it to soak in a little bit and not cause landslides and stuff. So
I think people are also looking a little bit at, you know, how do they get out? What are their, ingress and egress from their house?
Right.
Because a lot of people, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, how do I get out of here? We have to take a really quick break. When we come back, I want to ask you about other kinds of crime.
Oh, okay.
I've got a question for you. So you're listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
We drove right past that no trespassing sign. We sat on the tailgate and watched the planes take off. We thought we had all night, there was no need to rush. That's when those cops came pulling up. And I thought, man, ain't this some shit. Your daddy's gonna kill me. But if I survive tonight, I wouldn't change one thing. Baby, I know it sounds crazy, but there was something about the way the blue lights were shining, bringing out the freedom in your eyes. I was too busy watching you going wild, child, to be worried about going to jail. You were thinking that running for it would make a good story. I was thinking you were crazy as hell. You were so innocent, but you were stealing my heart. I fell in love in the back of a cop car.
Who knew? Even in country music.
Yeah. The old cop car.
Hey, we were talking about being prepared. And some people can get a lot of information about being prepared for wildfires if they go to a CAL FIRE website of readyforwildfire.org. And that talks about defensible space, preparing
for... Is it for like F-O-R or number four?
F-O-R, all spelled out. Readyforwildfire.org. And that talks about defensible space, preparing for wildfires, wildfire application apps, emergency kits, pre-evacuation preparations, and how to harden your home. Like I talked about that defensible space. So a lot of information there. If you go to the California Office of Emergency Services, there's a lot of preparation there, information, or from the FEMA website. There's a lot out there to be prepared.
FEMA's got a good app, too. Notify you of, like, high winds, different storm warnings, floods, that kind of stuff. The FEMA app for your phone is actually quite good.
A lot of times the power is going to go down when you talk about high winds. If there's a big weather front coming in, like high winds, PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, serving a lot of the unincorporated areas of California, especially in the rural areas, they'll shut down grids of their power lines to avoid or prevent particularly fires started by either down lines or limbs blowing across them, and or if there's a fire. And so a lot of times if there's a fire in the area, a lot of times that power grid is shut down. And so that could limit access to phones, the internet, computers, some different things. So you need to be prepared and, again, take that self-initiative and maybe leave if there's a fire in the area to that. Because a lot of times, sometimes those ways of communication might be restricted or prevented.
Yeah, I know a lot of people say, well, I'm going to stay and protect my house. Well, you have no idea what you're up against. You cannot protect your house with a garden hose when one of these fires comes through. It'll go right over the top of you.
That, and usually what are you dependent upon? Usually in these rural areas, a well. And the well is
needs power.
And unless you have a backup generator to power the well, that's not happening again.
Nope.
And a 3/4-inch garden hose is not going to protect your home.
Nope.
When you see firefighters with large diameter firefighting hoses and apparatus that can put out lots of gallons per minute, and sometimes they're not successful.
They're not.
As hot and as fast-moving as these fires are, and then you're risking, again, your life, the lives of the first responders and the firefighters to try and get to you if you're overrun.
Yeah.
And they may not make it there.
That's right.
So with regular crime, you know, you're downtown. I mean, obviously, there are some places you probably shouldn't go. I mean, people wind up in the wrong place at the wrong time.
That's a good point. I mean,
but how many times, I guess,
being aware of your surroundings,
how many times do they already know they shouldn't be there? And that little voice in your head says,
so
you
those
know,
hairs
this is a
on
bad
the back
deal.
Of your neck is standing, are standing up. That's usually a good clue. Sometimes driving around communities, if there's a concertina wire on fences and bars on the windows, that's usually a clue that you may not be in the best part of town. One time I was in the Los Angeles area driving on a city street, and made a wrong turn. And as soon as I turned onto the street, the whole atmosphere of the community changed. And I brought it to the attention of my wife and my adult child that was in the vehicle. I said, look at this. I said, we just turned. We're at not a half a block of where we were, and we are in the wrong part of town right now. And I said, even though our doors are locked on our vehicle and I'm armed, I'm still uncomfortable driving through this neighborhood. So we got back on where we were supposed to be. But it can change mm-hmm. that quick. You have to be aware of your surroundings.
Yeah.
And you just shouldn't ignore that yeah. little voice that always tells you.
Yeah,
you know, people say that all the time. I got in the elevator and I felt weird about it. Or I went out in the parking lot and there were just two people out there. And it just parking garages, all sorts of things like that.
Try and park in a well-lighted area. And parking garages, if you're the only car in a parking garage and there's a lot of pillars for support and everything, probably you could end up easily being victimized because there's a lot of places for bad people to hide and you're the only one around. Mm-hmm. Not a good situation.
Well, the other thing, too, if you're like crime drama people, not the fake ones, but I mean, you know, shows made about actual crimes, the thing you can't help but miss is that most of these people knew each other.
Correct.
I mean, this was somebody they let into their house or they went somewhere with who was sketchy or what. I mean, they all seem to know each other in a lot of them.
I was traveling across the United States on vacation a few months ago, and I can't remember what state I was in. But anyway, there was a state penitentiary nearby, and you wouldn't have known it except
don't pick up hitchhikers.
They said, yeah, caution, do not pick up any hitchhikers in the area. And I said, totally. Well, that's a clue, especially if they're in like a blue suit or an orange suit.
Yeah,
if they're wearing weird.
Must be a highway worker.
If they're wearing socks that are too big and flip-flops.
Yeah, exactly.
But I bet it happens.
It does, and it can be something as simple as going back to your car after you're shopping at the mall. Again, if you're going to be at nighttime, it's getting a little darker earlier, park near a light standard. And just as before you get to your car, have your keys ready to unlock it and get in. Mm-hmm. And then get in, lock it, start up and go. There was another scam that was going around California. If there was a note on your windshield or a photocopy of like a $100 bill, don't open your car door and get it, because then that's a scam to get somebody access into your car right while they're waiting around. If there's people maybe waiting around your car or occupied in cars, maybe wait till they leave or maybe go back to the mall and get to the assistance of a security guard to escort you to your car. If it doesn't feel right, it's probably not right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Again, listen to those that little voice in your head. It may not be wrong. You know, of course, if you're hearing the voices too long, you might want to seek professional help, but I'm just kidding there.
You might want to just sign yourself up to lose your gun rights there.
Yeah, but you have to be aware of those situations where you are. You might want to not go to the ATM in that dark alley at 2 o'clock in the morning. Again, that's kind of, there's a local bank here that has a little parking area for the dumpster that can hide people in. There's a whole bunch of alcoves around that just opens it up to be a victim of crime if you're going there.
Oh, right by their ATM?
Yeah, right by their ATM. And so it's not a good thing. Either go someplace else or prepare ahead of time to
get
that cash.
There are a lot of things that are pretty pretty basic. Like, I know it makes Bill crazy, but I have, like, my vehicles set that when I turn the key off, all the doors don't unlock.
Right.
You can set that within the car. Same, too, when you unlock your vehicle, you can set it so only the driver's door unlocks.
Right.
All the doors don't unlock.
Right.
So there are some really, especially if you live alone, I mean, there are a lot of things you can do.
If you're at home, someone knocks on the door, ask who it is. You don't have to open the door. And if they say it's law enforcement, hey, have dispatch call my house here. And see if it's dispatched.
Well, that's a good idea.
You can still challenge them, or if you look through the peephole and see if the person's in uniform, they say who they are. Necessarily don't answer your door. So some people say there's a knock on the door, I'm not answering it. Well, at least let them know someone in your home, because some burglars sometimes knock on the door, and if there's no answer, they go someplace else and either shoulder the door or kick in, break a window, or maybe just do it in the front door.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Christmas is over for now, but you know, that beautiful Christmas tree in your front window with all the packages underneath it is just a nice message for the burglars
magnet
to come in and burglarize
go
the
shopping.
Home. Yes.
Is Christmas, what are the highest crime days? That is there any particular day that there's more burglaries? Or
It varies, and it varies probably from time of year and stuff, and then are the burglaries that it occur during a certain day or was it reported during a certain day? So it does, okay. does vary. We take a lot of burglary reports during the daytime because people come in, like maybe after the weekend if they've been away, and then discover their home's been burglarized. Or in other times, they'll come home and report it in the evening because their home's been burglarized during the daytime. Some burglars kind of, quote, specialize in doing burglaries during the daytime because a lot of people
are at work.
Are at work. And both people work nowadays.
Right, right.
Or they might even get some scam, too, of somebody will knock on the door if you answer it. Hey, do you want your lawn mowed or your windows cleaned? I'm here. I'm looking for work. Go away. And then they come up with, or they're looking for John Smith that might live in the area, and it's just a scam because you answered the door and they were seeing if somebody was going to be home.
Right.
So, you know, chance favors the prepared mind, and prepare, be aware of his surroundings, lock your home, secure your home as you can and are financially able to.
Be useful to know your neighbors as well.
That is very good. And Neighborhood Watch is a big plus, and they also have applications for that. Like a neighborhood watch as well. Uh-oh, looks like we've been just covering the facts.
And it's the facts, kinda, ma'am.
So, good thing we just said just facts, ma'am.
Theme song from Dragnet. Looks like we're wrapping up another session of We the People. I'll let you take it from there.
Thanks, Tom. Sheriff Tom Pacheco from
on, Tom.
Shasta County. So we will see you at Costco since we try to stay out of crime. And have a happy New Year.
Best of New Year's to you and be safe.
All right, everybody. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.